Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to part two of this episode of Move. Jamie, are you ready?
Dude, I'm always ready. I'm strapped in. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be inspired, which is our word that we love to use.
Let's do this.
Part two of Move. If you want to be an archaeologist, if you want to be a lawyer, I agree that you need to go and get a degree and you need to follow that certain route. You need to follow logic in a sense. But actually, experience, there's nothing like experience. And actually, this sort of current day where everyone can go and get a degree, actually, life experience is so much more. It's because with risk, right, do you think you're limited then sometimes in life if you want to achieve something, but then you worry about something else? Do you think that limits you to achieve what you can achieve? Do you think sometimes you just have to go, forget everything that's happening on the side and just go for it yourself?
It all comes back to this inner voice of doubt. I think there will always be a little inner voice going, you shouldn't do this. So Everest was the last thing that I did. If I hadn't got to the summit, that would have affected me. It wouldn't be that I was back to square one, but all this work that I've done over the last 20 years to kind of build up my own confidence would have been deeply affected. And that was a huge risk. You know, that really was a risk. The chances of me successfully getting to the top of that mountain were pretty slim, really. It's not my natural field, mountaineering, altitude. I went with Victoria Pendleton, who sadly had to abandon her attempt. And it's kind of hit and miss. So if we use that as an example, I will still carry on taking risks, and there are varying degrees. So let's say you've written a book and it's done very well. Writing the next one is a risk, because if it doesn't do so well, you're only as good as your last product, as your last book or the last thing that you did in some ways.
Is that fear, though? Is that fear compared to risk?
Yeah.
Where actually you're going, if I don't achieve as well as the second, that's fear. And actually fear sometimes gets in the way of everything. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of people fear the fact that they're not going to achieve something, so they won't do it. And I don't think you have any fear in you at all. You just go, screw it, I'll just go and do it.
But you're completely right. This is inner voice. So the risk, is it genuine? If you write a second follow-up book to a very successful one, is that really a risk? Is it really going to ruin your life? If I decide next year to do another big challenge and it doesn't work out, does that really ruin my whole life? No, of course it doesn't. It's like an Olympian. If you've won a gold medal and then the next year you don't, yes, you'll be bitterly humiliated and
you're still
disappointed.
Still a gold medalist.
But you're still a gold medalist.
But it seems, Ben, when you talk, that I kind of get the impression that you're very considered about the projects that you do take on, or the adventures or the risks you do want to take. What things have you done, perhaps, that have failed or didn't work out? How do you look back on this?
Like everyone, there's been things. You know, I've written books that have kind of bombed. I don't really highlight them now.
Yeah.
Can we highlight them?
there are TV shows that I've did in my early years that I'm not particularly proud of. They wouldn't be on my CV. I'll tell you one story. I was traveling. I made a documentary a couple of years ago out in Africa with a charity that I work with called Tusk, and I was traveling with Prince William and Prince Harry, and we were in the middle of the Okavango Delta in Botswana, middle of nowhere, and one of the local guides, a Botswanan, came up to I was actually with William at the time, came up and went, he'd recognised one of us, and I was pretty certain it was William, and he went, Ben Fogel. I love watching you on Cash in the Attic. And I just thought, wow, this is kind of, this is a bit humiliating, a bit embarrassing, kind of cool, everything in one. But, that's an example. You know, doing that show, it's a great show. It brought great pleasure to lots of people. Would it be something that I was proud of and would put on my CV? Not necessarily. But I also think even those things that weren't necessarily in your at the top of your choice list, good things come from it. Going back to like failure, because that wasn't failure, that was just kind of doing things that don't necessarily suit who I am. But yes, of course, there have been moments of failure. In fact, my wife and I tried to bring out a snack product. I know you guys have your candy kittens, and I wanted to bring out a kind of slightly more nutritious health snack, an alternative to the granola bar that, you know, a lot of the breakfast cereal ones, they're just not particularly healthy for you. They're not particularly tasty. And I live on those things.
Yeah.
When I'm on big expeditions, you need to have
convenience.
You need to have convenience. And we found all the investment. You know, we put everything in. We got an amazing team together. And for about 3 or 4 years, it was a hard slog. And it failed in the end. It didn't work out, which is why I have huge respect for any small businesses that do work. I think that gave me a great insight into the hard work, because everyone sees that finished product. Everyone will look at you, Jamie, and they'll go, look, well done, you know, but you know, it must have been quite
sure. You had
all the money that you needed, you had the profile, but actually people don't fully realize that beneath that calm exterior are those furious paddling
duck feet.
And I kind of, it's what I try to reiterate to people, that it's like smoke and mirrors, lots of life. You know, people think that everything is easy. That there's an assumption that the grass is always greener. You look at the next lawn and it looks greener than yours. It looks neater than yours. But there's a lot of work that's gone into it. You know, can you imagine the amount of fertilizer that's been used and manure that's gone on there and the careful mowing? And that's the thing that I try to reiterate people. Yes, I climbed Everest. I spent 3 years working towards it. Yes, I rode the Atlantic. Do you know how much work James and I put into that, trying to get enough money? We didn't even get the money. We had to half finance it ourselves. And I think it's really important to be honest in life and to not let, especially youngsters, be almost duped into thinking that you can, that everything is easy and you can have things at the click of the fingers.
To sort of, I don't want to dwell on it too much, perhaps, but that kind of the business that you and your wife started, what was it, do you think, that when you look back, could you have done it differently, or were there things, where were the lessons that you learned there?
I think it's, there's lots of lessons, but then we'd be going down a proper business model, and I could sit down with you and talk to you ages. Yeah, I learned a lot, and if we did it again, we'd do it very, very differently. But what I really discovered, I don't want to get onto a rant here, but was the power of the big businesses, the power of the supermarkets, the power of the people who are ultimately going to sell it. Listen, if I sold it through my website, I could flog a couple, I could set up a little stall on Portobello Road near me. It was a good product. It was tasty. Yeah. It did what we wanted, but that's just half the battle. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, if we take the business model there with an expedition, a lot of people don't realize the hard work that goes into just getting to the start line. So rowing the Atlantic was one thing, but just getting that boat and all of the equipment and having it all at that start line was easily half of James and my battle. Yep. Same when we went to the South Pole, just raising the money, getting ourselves in shape, getting the team around us was so hard. And the same goes for a product. You will have your sweets in the bag, and everyone will go, that's amazing, but how do you actually make that then work?
Absolutely,
and I think that's a metaphor for life. You might have a great voice, you might be the most amazing singer, but how do I take this amazing singer, or how do I take this great footballer and make sure that they're seen by the right people and that they can follow that path of success? And part of that is down to luck, let's be honest. It happened. I hate to say it, but it is. Part of it is how you know, and part of it is really hard work, and part of it is having a great product or a great idea. And that's what I've learned in life, is that you need to have all of those. If I was to do that snack product again, yes, I would change quite a lot of what we did. What's interesting is now there's millions of versions of what we had come up with.
Because it always happens a little bit early.
But I think we were a little bit early. I think we were a bit ambitious with how we did it. But I don't have any regrets. I'm a bit disappointed that the investment that came in, we didn't make work, but that's the life, the risk and, of business.
But I also think, Ben, with you, I don't think you ever think that you fail as well. Like a lot of people, and that's the great thing about people who have that constant drive. And nothing's a failure. Everything's a learning curve. So you've learned from everything you've done, whether it's cash in the attic or you. And also you're not, which is so important, you're not embarrassed or ashamed of your past in any way whatsoever, whatever you've done. There's a lot of stigma around being posh and being posh in television. You know, you go, well, I'm posh. Same as me, I always say. You know, same as that. We're educated well, all these different things, and no one's ever ashamed of it in any way. You kind of say where you're from. And I think for you, perhaps, if I was going to put out, I reckon your hardest challenge you had to do ever, you've climbed Everest, you've done the Atlantic, you've done the poles, North Pole, you've done, it was the North Pole, right?
South
Pole. You've done all these things, but you spoke about dyslexia. I reckon for you, writing a book was probably your biggest challenge.
It really was. I've written nearly 15 books to date, and that, they really are some of my proudest achievements. I love writing.
Totally,
love writing. I find it so beautiful that you can take all these words and you can turn them into something really lyrical or really poetic or really empowering. And, you know, to go back to your failure thing, one of my favourite quotes is from Winston Churchill, that success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And for me, though, you're right. Writing that very first book, it was in 2001, and I wrote a book called The Tea Time Islands, which is a travel book. I travelled to the kind of remotest islands that still belong to, that are still part of the empire almost. So Tristan da Cunha and St. Helena, all these really wild remote islands, the Falklands.
Weren't you held in captive in one of them?
I was arrested on Pitcairn Island. It's one of the hardest places to reach in
you
the world.
You took a private yacht, did
it's,
you?
It's where all the mutineers from the Bounty settled, and there's still all the direct descendants of Christian Fletcher. And I was arrested and deported 40 minutes after arriving. It took the whole trip to about 6 weeks. It was quite humiliating, to be honest, but it made a great chapter in the book. But you're right, writing that first book and being nominated for travel awards was, I was so proud of that. And I'm still, every time I publish a book, I think I burst with pride, because I never thought I would ever reach that position where I could actually write a book that would be good enough to be published.
Do you know, that is so important, right? Because and people looking at you would say, like I said before, they would say, well, that's the hardest thing you've done, climbing Everest. But for you, it isn't. You, that's just what I want to do, because that seems like fun and an adventure and all those different things. And actually, your biggest challenge, you said, and you're one of your proudest moments, writing the book. And for some people, they go, well, that's the easiest moment. But actually, that's you putting totally yourself outside of your comfort zone. And it is so important for people to recognise and be self-aware of what makes them feel comfortable and what doesn't make them feel comfortable, and for them to step outside of their comfort zone. How important is it for you in life to step outside your comfort zone? Do you think it's important to do that?
Well, I think you become complacent otherwise.
Yeah.
We've got it pretty good right now. I know the world is slightly polarized and politically unstable all across the world, but ultimately, consumerism, which is kind of destroying the planet, but I don't want to get into the negatives of that right now. But we've got it pretty good, don't we? I mean, society has provided a pretty comfortable backdrop. Not for everyone. A lot of people are struggling financially, but ultimately, compared to those that were living just after World War II, for example, with rationing and really struggling in life, we've got it pretty good right now. And I think a lot of people just don't realise that. So there's a lot of NHS bashing. Now, I know that NHS is underfunded, they're struggling, and I feel terrible for those that don't get the treatment as quickly as they want. But all you need to do, those who are complaining, spend a little bit of time in some African nations, some South American nations, and see what countries that don't have access to a national health service experience. Go to the United States of America and have a look at the queues that turn up when the Red Cross or the Salvation Army set up a little medical tent, and there are queues 3 days long for people to get treatment. We have an amazing health service. And don't get me wrong, I know that it's underfunded and we need to sort it out. But sometimes you need to take yourself away to look back at what we do have. And I'm just using that as one example. For me, I've got a really comfortable life. I've got a beautiful wife. I've got a family I love. I've got a lovely house. I've kind of got everything that I ever dreamed of. But there's a tendency that if you just sit there and kind of, you don't fully appreciate what you have. Sometimes you need to just step away from it.
Well, I suppose the travel. I mean, did I read that you've been to over 100 countries?
Do you know what? I've kind of lost count now. I mean, I do. Well, so a show that I do now called New Lives in the Wild. In fact, the new series begins beginning of January. That takes me away a huge amount. Over since I began the series, we've made 60 now. So that's 60 different countries in itself. And travel has been a huge part of who I am.
And that affords you that great perspective, I suppose, to be able to make that link that actually we've got it pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I think the most important learning I've ever had in life is meeting other people and going to other places, meeting other cultures, understanding how other people choose to live, other people are forced to live. And for me, it's given me great perspective on this country. And there's a lot of whinging, a lot of complaining about this country. But I really, as someone who's traveled a lot, and I will be attacked for just saying that, because people will say, well, I have no idea. People say that I'm disconnected with the reality of this country. I would beg to differ. I've done a huge amount of filming in Great Britain as well, and I've traveled to every single corner. I'm not just because my accent sounds like I'm a Londoner living in a bubble. I really do understand quite a lot of the nuts and bolts of this country, but it's more through my overseas experience that has given me, I think, quite a good insight into society.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Society generally.
But also, Ben, speaking of health, right, you've also been through times where your health hasn't been so good. And probably your most famous time is when you got the skin eating disease and you had to drink poison in order to, and the poison normally makes people not walk or for 2 years, and you were back on your feet in 5 days. What is it the disease called? It's called
leishmaniasis. Yeah, I picked it up while I was doing an expedition series for the BBC, and I was in Peru, and I contracted this flesh-eating bug, and the only way to treat it is chemotherapy. So it's a kind of a metallic compound that you get in your it's called an infusion. So I would go not far from where we're doing this podcast, actually, just up the road on Tottenham Court Road to the School of Tropical Diseases. I'd have to go in there every day for 3 weeks and lie in a bed for a couple of hours while I had my chemical therapy. And I can't say it was the happiest 3 weeks. It was pretty bleak. But I also, I like to look for silver linings from every experience like that. And actually, it was shortly after doing that that I ended up making a show for the BBC called Make Me a New Face. While I was in the School of Tropical Diseases, I met a man from Ethiopia who was missing half his face. And he'd contracted a disease called NOMA. Very similar effects, but it's actually started by malnutrition. And it eats away at the skin. And I ended up being invited by a team of plastic surgeons from Great Ormond Street Hospital to go out to Ethiopia. And we spent 6 months following young children as their faces were reconstructed with plastic surgery. And it was one of the most profound life-changing experiences. It moved me to tears seeing these children have their lives transformed over the course of a couple of weeks. And so when you talk of ill health in something like leishmaniasis, I don't dwell on it, because I was still so lucky I got access to the treatment. A little kind of conclusion to that story is that actually the day after finishing my treatment, I perhaps foolishly, went off to Antarctica to spend 7 weeks walking to the South Pole. So I didn't give my body time to recover. So when we reached the South Pole, all the wounds, I've still got big scars on me, opened up again. And I came back home, and rather than celebrating, I had to go back into hospital for another 3 weeks of chemical therapy. So, do you know what?
But you got frostbite and hypothermia out there, didn't
you? I like to think that all of those scars are kind of battle scars from life. I think they're little reminders of what I've done and where I've been.
But again, with you, Ben, what's so great is that even though you were sitting in the hospital unit for tropical diseases, again, what you do is you find an avenue out of there. So without your journey leading you there, you wouldn't have then gone and done that documentary and moved you so much and experienced so much of that. I think the biggest thing which we've come across today, and what everyone has, you mentioned at the beginning, is the voice in your head. And what you didn't explain is how you actually quieten down that voice, because I think Ed and I and everyone has a voice, whether that voice is negative or positive, telling you can't achieve things. How do you quieten it?
I think it's interesting what you say there, because sometimes that voice can go the other way. Like you say, it can be too positive.
Totally.
And I think that translates into extreme arrogance. And I think there's a tendency, a lot of people in the public eye, sometimes they get swept up by that own voice of the voice that's congratulating them. So it's somehow trying to not silence it completely, but just turn it down. So you're always aware of it. You're always respectful of it. And for me, it's absolute focus. So I think it varies from time to time how I do it. So on Everest, for example, I knew I had put in enough training. I knew I was capable that mountain. So when the voice was shouting at me, "You shouldn't be here, you're inexperienced, you're going to fall down a crevasse," I laser-like thought about the other experiences. I focused on what I had done, other experiences, and that sort of silenced it. The same goes for if you're doing an interview like this and you're sitting there and it's kind of going, you're not prepared, you don't know what to ask next, you're not good enough for this. You just think, no, actually, I have prepared. I've got a whole series of questions in my mind. So it's about preparation. Claire Boulding said it very well. It's one of the reasons she did so beautifully in the 2012 Olympic Games. You could tell the difference between those presenters who had prepared, who had read, who understood every single nuance, and those who just winged it, those who just turned up and just thought, yeah, I'll get through this, just with my enthusiasm and my excitement. And what I've realised over the years is you have to put in the hard work. You have to put in the research. You have to put in the planning, the preparation. And for me, that's also how I silence that voice that's telling me I am ill-prepared by being prepared.
But then how do you quieten the voice that tells you, because I think you probably have that sometimes where you think you're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can be fully prepared, you can have done the training, you can do all those different things, but that voice saying, well, you're not good enough, almost that imposter syndrome. And a lot of people would experience that. How do you quieten that voice?
Well, that comes back to kind of the conclusion of the whole conversation we've had. That's the last 20 years of my life since I went onto that island have been building the armament, the ammunition, so that I can go, well, actually, do you know what? I did do this, and I have done that, and I did succeed at doing that, and I have been able to do this. And I go through all of those things that I have been successful and that I have achieved. And that's my way of silencing. It doesn't mean it's not there. I think it will always be there. But I also think that that's part of human nature. I think it's not surprising that society is suffering a kind of mental health epidemic now, because a lot of people don't have the tools to control that inner voice. And for me, I think it's one of the reasons why I think the next stage of my life is sharing my own experiences, trying to translate some of those wilderness experiences and some of the expeditions that I've done into everyday life, and maybe sharing with other people the benefits of spending a little bit more time in the wilderness, the benefits of sometimes just turning social media and cutting off from the outside world. Because I think a lot of people, I know it sounds very easy, you just turn everything off, but a lot of people are a little bit too fearful of doing that.
Before we started recording, Ben, you mentioned that you and your family do a lot of traveling together as well, and you're going away for New Year, I think, this year. What is that? Obviously an important part, presumably, of the way you want to bring up your children, but when you think about those challenges and the mental health landscape that your children are growing up in, how do you prepare them for that? And what kind of advice do you give them as they grow up?
I'm quite fearful of it, really. I think when you look at a medium like social media, I don't think you can underestimate the impact that has on youngsters. And you know, when I was starting out in this business, it didn't really exist. So I didn't really have, you know, I just had kind of mean-spirited journalists occasionally writing snide comments, but I didn't have a barrage of trolling that lots of people experience today. And when I see my young children who are not, they're not online at all yet, I am slightly fearful of how they're going to navigate through that world. But I think I'm arming them the way I was armed, which is with just a good, healthy moral compass about what's right and what's wrong in life. And reminding them that there will always be critics. There will always be naysayers. There will always be bullies. That is life. There's 7 or 8 billion of us on this planet. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. But as long as you remain true to your own spirit, as long as you remain true to your own values, actually, I think you can just soldier on with your head held high. If you're confident about your spirit, and I'm not going to go too spiritual now, but I really do feel if you are confident that your spirit is set right, anyone can throw whatever they want at you, but it's part of that armor that I talked about that I've kind of put up on myself, and it's not very thick. I still get stung by criticism, but I stand tall with my ethics and my social conscience, and I think you just have to accept that you'll always get a couple of eggs thrown at you, but just don't let the eggs spoil. Turn them into an omelette.
I think that's so perfect to kind of finalize on as well. And also, Ben, the fact that you're so honest about, you know, you still have those insecurities, you still, you know, things still sting you. You still, even though you've achieved so much and done different things, you still feel that you're like, oh, well, that still hurts and those things still hurt. No, we really appreciate it massively.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben. It's been really, really interesting. We ask every guest before the end of the show one question. And that is, if you were going to start something completely new tomorrow, perhaps, you know, forget the career you have had or the business you started, what do you think you would start if you could rip up the rule book and do anything tomorrow morning?
It's a good question. You know, there's so many things I still want to do in life. I think if I could do anything right now, I feel helping people with this mental health epidemic is something I would love to do. And I know the answer is so easy. I need to get a couple of little remote islands all around the world, and I need to somehow set up a business that people don't have to pay, because those that have the least need it the most.
Yeah.
Somehow set up a series of little wilderness therapy islands all around the world where people can just go for a week to completely cut themselves off from the outside world and to rebuild their inner spirit. And I would love to do that.
Sounds amazing. Do you know what, sign me up.
Just quickly, I did a TV show called Hunted, which is where you went on the run for 2 weeks, and I did it, and no phones, nothing at all, complete switch, living in a tent. And after 10 days, it was the happiest I think I've ever been. I remember waking up, unzipping the tent, and the sunrise was coming through, and I was sitting with my friend, and I think, God, this, and I was, there was no connection, there was nothing at all, and it was the happiest I've ever been. And what's quite good about that, as you said, is that, you know, people worry about these kind of things, but actually it doesn't take that long to rebuild your spirit. And actually 2 weeks, week, whatever it is, it can actually rebuild you.
I think it can be done in a little less than the 2 weeks. I really do think 7 days and people can find happiness again. They can find that inner soul, that inner spirit. So I think I have the answer. It's just how to actually make it happen.
Fantastic. Very exciting.
Ben Fagel, thank you so much for coming on Move.
Thank you so much, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. I told you it's going to be a good one.
I knew it. That was epic.
I mean, knew it.
What a guy. And what a nice, normal, bloke to come and talk to.
Yeah, it's so nice and so normal, but also what is amazing when you meet a lot of these people, same thing, a lot of successful people have that problem with imposter syndrome. They feel like perhaps they haven't achieved as much as they should have achieved, or perhaps they haven't got to the place and they are, you know, happy where they are. And Ben was saying, he said, you know, he feels like maybe potentially has a bit of imposter syndrome sometimes.
I think that's really interesting and amazing, as we talked about, you know, to kind of kick things off by saying perhaps he's not that confident.
Yeah.
I think everybody assumes that people on TV are the most confident.
Totally.
Or people out there doing things in positions of authority or power or leadership must have that confidence that perhaps, oh, I haven't got that confidence, I can't go and do this. But actually, maybe you don't need it. Everybody's bluffing. It's all smoke and mirrors, as Ben said.
It totally, you know, Ben has done so much as we spoke throughout the entire podcast. We also want to mention that he's going on tour. He's doing a 2020 tour.
I think it's called Tales from the Wilderness. And he's popping up in cities all over the country. You can go to his Instagram and find out more about that at Ben Fogle.
And we've left the link below in the podcast sort of information bit, so go and check it out there.
I mean, when we were doing our research for today, we looked at so much. There are so many stories in Ben's life, and I think that show is a good place to go and listen to them, because we only touched on probably a third of the things that he's done, if that.
You know, what we like to do in the podcast is pick out a couple of points that really resonated with us. And for me, one of the biggest points was you can't achieve success without risk. You have to risk in order to achieve success. I couldn't. Ben said that, which was amazing. I love the fact that he said that. And also his Winston Churchill quote.
Definitely. I mean, I think there was lots. I think that he said that he lives by that adage of add life to your days and not days to your life.
Yeah.
And clearly he is packing a lot of life into his days. Busy, busy man. But so many parallels as well, I think, for people that are listening, that are looking to start a business or launched into their next stage of education, whatever it may be, kind of overcoming those fears, conquering that kind of inner voice. Lots to learn that hopefully you can apply to life, whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah, and also if you take anything from this, just go out there, go and achieve anything you possibly can. Don't hold back at all. Just really, really go for it. Ben, thank you so much for coming on Move. It was amazing. Thank you so much for listening. Honestly, it really does mean a huge amount. And we also hope today's podcast has inspired you to move towards your dream or passion. Now, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. And if you'd like to get in touch, please email us at move@moveclub.co.uk or follow us on Instagram @moveclub. Until next time, this is Move.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.